A very warm welcome to this podcast. You are listening to A Cup of Tea with Stephen D. I am your host, Stephen DeRue, and I wish to thank you very much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoy listening. Cup of Tea with Stephen D is a podcast that will take you on a trip back in time. I will be joined by those dear to me, and I'll be asking them to rewind the clocks back to their younger days to learn new things about their life, about their highs and lows, and to hear more about their family and friends. I hope you enjoy our conversation. John DeRue is a husband to Sophie, is a sibling to Marianne, Leslie and Suzanne, is a father to Roslyn, David, Michael and myself, and is a grandfather to James, Matthew, Braden, Mia, Oscar, Harriet, Isla and Ottilie. John DeRue, this is part 5 of your story. In this episode, the final episode of this series, I'm continuing my conversation with my father, John DeRue, and I will be asking him the questions whilst he is pouring the tea. John will share with us his memories of being out of a job and then subsequently starting in a new role as a district horticulturalist after his general manager position at the Tropical Fruit Research Station was made redundant. He will also recall the purchase of his very first home and share with us the brutal truth that he was a much more patient grandfather than he was a father. My conversation with John resumes as we discuss the latter stages of his career with the Department of Agriculture. When the decision was made by the department to merge the management responsibilities of the Austenville and Wallingbar stations.
Well, there was a review of research stations, 3 at New South Wales, in regard to the number and the manager's positions. Anyway, following the review, there are a number of stations that were deleted as far as management ships were concerned. They were amalgamated with other stations and become substations. And Austenville Tropical Fruit was one of those. So after 18 years of managing 2 very different research stations, first of all fisheries for 9 years and then tropical fruit at Austenville for 9 years, I was without a job until I was offered the district horticultural position at Austenville in September, about 3 weeks later, 1996, and that was to be responsible for avocados, mango and passion fruit advisory work to growers on the far north coast.
So just pause there for a moment. So does that mean for 3 weeks you were out of a job?
3 weeks I was tidying up, handing over to the Wallingbar manager, doing a few odd jobs. Just cleaning out my office, moving files to Wallingbar and getting things in train so the manager at Wallingbar would be in a position to take over the activities of Austenville.
So what would have happened had there not been a district horticulturalist role?
Good question. Don't know.
Interesting indeed.
I was Johnny on the spot. I was lucky.
And so let's talk about your new role then. You're allowed to live on in the property on the farm. So they didn't force you to move out there, which was, I guess, convenient.
No, I lived there for another 6 years before we moved into Austinville.
Did the rate they charge you for the rent change?
No, it didn't change because I was still basically oversighting the security of the place at nights and at weekends. And they have a rate, and it's a fixed rate. And so the weekly rental didn't change.
Now, wasn't there a break-in during the time that you were there? All the computers were stolen at some point?
There was a break-in. There was some computer damage, and a couple were taken. We did have security installed after that with cameras and sirens. But luckily, files were backed up and no data was lost because of the backup procedures that we had in play at the time.
So when the computers were stolen, there was no alarm system?
No.
So your new role, Father, did you have to go back to college?
No, I was lucky. I kind of fell into the job pretty easily because as far as the avocados were concerned, New South Wales was part of a Queensland project, a very big one called AvoMan, and that was a industry-wide program computerising avocado management and production systems. So I fell into that with Queensland and Western Australian horticulturists, and I'd done a lot of drafting and proofreading of manuals and helped in the education of growers in regard to putting information into the package to get answers in regard to production that led to yield and marketing programs that followed on from that. So that was the avocado work. The mango work, basically I became the secretary treasurer of the New South Wales Mango Grower Association. And in that role, I produced a quarterly newsletter for growers. It was a hard copy. Computers weren't, 1996 weren't as advanced. Well, growers never had them, not all growers. So I did also update the mango growing guide and the mango disease guide. The passion fruit, we had a passion fruit breeding experiment on the station, so I took over the overseeing of that in regard to the data collection and the management. But I also screened fungicides, new fungicides for national registration for disease control. So that was an important area. And talking about disease control, one of the main areas there was I took over the management or the maintenance of 10 automatic weather stations along the north coast from Wauchope in the south, about 3 hours to the south driving, up to the Tweed, about an hour and a half to the north. And they used to be downloaded every – I used to download these weather stations, automatic weather stations, every Monday morning. It used to take me half a day to download the all the data for the week, produce crop and fruit irrigation scheduling and disease forecastings from that information. And I also had a number of people that looked after these stations that I had to manage and supervise and order materials for as well. So that was the main area in the three crops that I did. But I guess one important area, which I was very proud of, together with two colleagues, John Slack and David Hewitt, I provided the data and they developed computerised spreadsheets to calculate annual fertiliser replacement rates. for avocados, mangoes, and passion fruit. And that was based on yield, you know, how much product was taken from the land. It was based on weather conditions, particularly rainfall and leaching, on soil type. And it was this product was later developed for low-till stone fruit and for other crops, including bananas and macadamia nuts. So I was very proud of my area in developing these spreadsheets, because fertilizer are expensive, and if you're not putting on the right amount at the right time, you're wasting money and you could be, you know, doing more damage than good, particularly with, you know, leachate into watercourses.
And those two colleagues have gone on to be your good friends, Father. You've stayed in touch with post-retirement.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Probably my only two friends. Yes.
And was it quite liberating to move away from that management role and you're just ultimately looking after yourself? Did you find that quite liberating, or did you miss the management of other people in the new role?
Oh, the new role did take some getting used to. I had to communicate also in team situations with particularly Queensland DPI. We'd done a lot of work there because the crops that I was dealing with, avocados and mangoes in particular, are grown in large areas in Queensland, and they are the main state in Australia that produces those two crops. So they had a big input. So I worked in a team situation, but there was a lot of one-on-one communication with growers. And, of course, I had to organise grower meetings, field days, farm walks. So it was a different type of activities that I had to partake in. But I did enjoy it. I ran my own race. I could do my own thing. Managing staff and finances is taxing, and it does take it out of you. So a change was probably a good thing for me after 30-odd years.
When I was a little boy, my daddy used to say to me, son, we got a lot of big plans and a lot of hard work to be done. Go get your marbles, put them in the house, tear down your castles in the sand. Come with your pappy to the cotton patch, get a little dirt on your hands. Get a little dirt on your hands, boy. Get a little dirt on your hands. If you want to grow up to be a big, big man,
you gotta
get a little dirt on your hands.
Gotta
get a little dirt on your hands.
And you mentioned 6 years into the new role, you did eventually move off the property, and that was because mother and yourself found a house to buy in Alstonville. What do you recall about that experience?
Well, I enjoyed living on the station because it was a 5-minute walk to work. I could come home for lunch. I could come home in any emergency situation. It was convenient. We had a nice home on the top of the plateau overlooking the coast. But Sophia was interested in setting up shop in Alstonville. We hadn't owned a home in our married life to that stage. And she looked around and looked around. She'd done the spade work. And the only house that I looked at was the house we bought here at 60 Tanimura Drive. And it had everything that I wanted. A large backyard where I could develop a garden and a shade house for orchids that I started growing a bit later. It was on the top side of the street. And only a kilometre from town, so within close walking distance. My daughter lived just down the road at 44 Tenamira, so she was close, but not next door.
And was it a stressful process buying it? I can't recall it. I don't think it went to auction, but it was. I guess you made an offer or paid the price, and I don't recall there being any sort of competing bidders at the time, was there?
No. We made an offer. It was about $194,000, I think, from memory. We bought the house for, and then in about 2 or 3 years, it actually doubled in price because we bought right on the bottom of a pretty sharp curve of price increases. So we were very, very lucky when we bought, because otherwise house values just went through the roof. So very, very lucky we bought.
They ran out of land, and basically Austinville had then become contained.
Yes, and prices were increasing, in capital cities at the same time. There was a price rise in real estate in New South Wales. But no, we were very, very lucky we bought. In fact, the week we moved in was the week that Matthew was born. So in January 2002. So we can remember the date quite well.
Well, that takes us on to, I guess, your grandchildren, which came along around that period of time. James being the first in year 2000. Is there much you remember about the arrival of your first grandchild?
No, not as such. Very excited, obviously. Very excited for number one always. But no, he was a good baby from memory. As I said, Matthew came on the week we moved into Tenamira Drive, and then Braden and Mia, of course. And they are the four eldest of our grandchildren, all now teenagers. And then we go down to Michael and Stephen's. They have two little ones each, from seven down to, four or five. So our grandkids are basically teenagers or preschool, early schoolers.
And when you look back to your life as a father of young children and as a grandfather of young children, do you see many similarities in that person, that John Derue, or have you mellowed as you've aged?
Oh, I think I've mellowed. As a father, I think things were pretty much black and white. Probably more grey with the grandkids, but I guess other people can adjudicate on that better than I can. But I enjoy the grandkids being around. They all have their own, loving ways, and it's a joy. You generally only have them for a much shorter period of time, but as a father, I you know, I hope I showed good example and, you know, and led from the front in what I said I did. Those days are now well in the past.
And the grandkids never allowed in the kitchen beyond the life.
No, well, when I, you know, retired from work, I did do more and more cooking in the kitchen. I enjoyed that from watching TV shows. Anyway, in the kitchen, there's a bench that goes across to the fridge. And because the kitchen is only relatively small and you're busy, you know, working in ovens and stoves and hot things, I used to say to the grandkids, there's a line across here, and I used to hop point to the line on the timber floor, and L-I-N-E. The grandkids thought it was a line, and L-I-O-N, and kept saying, "Poppy, we can't see the line." And I said, "There it is, the L-I-N-E." So, yeah, that was a bit of a joke for a few years.
Don't cross the line.
Don't cross the line, yes.
And now, of course, you have to commute to your office. And how did you do that for the remaining few years of your career?
Well, it was only about three and a half Ks push bike. I left each morning about 6:45, got to work by 7:00. And then had a shower and was ready for work at 7:30. Generally worked through until about 4-ish in the afternoon, then rode home. So it was just a little bit of exercise. At that particular time, I started getting arthritis in my feet and my toes. So, walking became a little bit more difficult. But I enjoyed the push bike ride to work, except in wet weather. I used to take the car.
And that leads us, I guess, to your retirement from the Department of Agriculture. How did that come about?
Well, as departments always do, they depend upon finance from state governments and there's always higher priorities in agriculture. It might be health, it might be hospitals, it might be education, police. Anyway, agriculture were again being screwed for funds. And over the years, the department went through a series of redundancies. And in 2006, in the middle of the year, they were going through another period of offering redundancies. So at that particular stage in the middle of 2006, I was approaching retirement. I was about 59. I was thinking of my options, worked out what my entitlements were, and decided that I would take it. And I hadn't taken any long service leave in my entire career. So with my redundancy payment and my long service leave, it was enough money to pay the complete house mortgage and to fund renovations on the house as well. So with my guaranteed pension that I had paid into over my entire working life, I figured that my take-home salary was basically equivalent to what I was getting anyway, because you don't pay any tax, you don't pay any super, union fees, and there are a few other benefits as well. So I accepted the redundancy, and I took that on the 1st of September 2006 after 38 and a half years working in the New South Wales agriculture.
So your fortnightly, I guess, income receipt in retirement was about equal to what they were paying you at the time?
Yes, when you consider, as I said, you don't pay tax, you don't pay any more super contributions, You don't have to pay health leave loadings, union dues. There's a whole things you don't have to pay anymore. And it wasn't the full amount, but it was approaching a reasonable income that we could plan, living in comfort in retirement until I qualified at 65 for some age pension to supplement my state pension.
Very good. And you mentioned some renovations on the house. What have you done to 60 Tenamira since buying it all those years ago in 2002?
Well, the big renovation was the addition of an outdoor, well, not an outdoor, but a enclosed sunroom type room, plenty of windows, size about 12 metres by 5 metres, so a fairly large area. We took down an awning, took the pavers up, and enclosed this back area, which is now an entertainment area. We can comfortably have 20 people out there wining and dining. We've got a nice big TV. I watch my sport out there. So that was the big renovation. Associated with that, I had to move back my retaining wall. There's about a metre retaining wall at the back. I had to move that back a couple of metres to make room. So I took the advantage then of changing from timber to cement bricks, and I got that professionally done at the time. But it was helped by Sophie's friend Gwen, who left her some money in her will. She was a lovely old lady that Sophie used to go to tennis with and then to the club, and she was kind enough to leave Sophie some money. So that helped to pay for the renovations and the furniture that went into the back room. But also, we got, wooden timber floors in the kitchen and dining room, new blinds, painting, floor coverings, additional lighting and plumbing, all the things you do when you do a renovation. So, we've got a nice home now, very comfortable, and we're quite happy.
So hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you.
Now, we touched on the grandkids briefly, but what we didn't touch on was the weddings of your children. So let's go back to, I guess it must have been 1998 when Roslyn walked down the aisle. I guess before that, Christopher would have spoken to you and perhaps asked for your permission. Do you recall anything about that conversation with Chris?
No, I don't recall that conversation. But, Chris was a nice young fellow, an apprentice plumber at the time. So he had a good trade. He had a characteristic, though, that he was always late for everything. And I christened him London because London is 9 hours behind Australia. So originally Chris, but now he's known as Larry. But no, I don't remember conversation with Chris. But what I do remember about Roslyn's wedding is a couple of days prior to her wedding, I was busy getting the house in order, particularly the gardens out the front, and I got bitten on the knee, I think by a spider. I was admitted to hospital, and I was only allowed out for a couple of hours for Rosalind's wedding. I was in a wheelchair, went to the church, went to the reception for a couple of hours, but could not walk her down the aisle. So that was disappointing.
I think Sophia took your place.
Yes.
But I think you were there to make a speech at the reception, because I think Michael recites it quite well, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, almost word for word. It was fairly short, but it was disappointing that I was laid up with so many family people in town at the time. But that's life.
And was there any long-term effects of that spider bite? Does that knee still cause you bother now, or did it go away after a period of time completely?
No. Obviously, I got some toxin in my system, and over a period of time, I haven't got any side effects from that, no.
So then we roll forward. I think David would have been the next to tie the knot to Megan. Again, a service at Alstonville, followed by a reception in Ganellabar. What do you remember about David's wedding?
Yeah, well, David, from memory, I think he had a wet day for his wedding. The reception was up at Invercall House, up at the top of Ganellabar. They then moved into a home in Ganellabar. They lived there for a number of years before they moved down to Balna, where they've had two or three homes working their way up. I don't remember much more than that, to tell you the truth.
Michael's wedding was the next, and he married Amber. But I guess if we go back to the early days when Michael first met Amber, I seem to recall that her job at Bilo involved fruit and veg. And so when she would visit, you would give her a fruit and veg identification test. Do you remember those?
Yes, poor girl. It must have been intimidating, because she would have only been probably 16 or 17. Yeah, Michael left Woodlawn in year 10, and got a job at Bilo, became the trolley king, as we say. But he worked very hard. He worked his way up through the various sections and then moved to Queensland and became the youngest manager of a Bilo store in Queensland before he was 21. So he done very well for himself. But, Michael met Amber at Bilo, and then Amber then went to university in Queensland, and Michael moved up to Queensland as well to live with Ewan Bowler Street in Paddo, and from there, he had several stores. But their wedding was out in the country. They had a garden wedding, or down by a creek. It was a self-contained area, in as much as there were cabins where people stayed overnight. There was the reception room, and there was this nice grassy patch down by the creek, and it was wet underfoot also for their wedding, and Ross put down some wood chips as a path so people wouldn't bog up too much. They went to the Cook Islands for their honeymoon, I remember that. And I guess the next wedding was, was yours, son, in Bali.
Bali, of all places. Yeah, do you remember much of that?
Yes, I remember. I remember the lovely villa. Your friends being there, the food, I remember the reception. Yes, I've got quite clear, well, I guess being more recent, it's fresher in my mind and quite different to the other weddings.
And I guess Rose started our recent love affair of Bali, again a period of annual visits for the family to meet up.
Yes, I guess, you know, we've done a number of visits each winter period, June, July period, in Australia's winter, to Bali, and they're all lovely holidays.
What do you remember about the visits to Brisbane when Michael and I were living up there? I was at university. You and Mother would come up and visit from time to time. Do you remember much about those visits?
Yes, I remember Bowler Street. I think he had about three different houses in Bowler Street. And I walk up the hill to Cyril's. What was he, an Indian, wasn't he?
Hari Tandoori.
Yes, and I remember on my, when I was still working, trips up to Queensland, particularly in Nambour, where I used to go on a regular basis, popping in and having a meal with you, and offering to buy you an ice cream at the end of the meal. And no, Dad, I won't have an ice cream. I'll go next door and I'll buy a 4-litre container for the same price. So, so that
economics.
That used to last, a few days. But no, you survived on noodles and an extra job or two working in hotels to get a few bob. But
so that reminds me that the subject that you struggled at Hawkesbury Agricultural College was agricultural economics, yet you spent the rest of your life managing the economics of agricultural stations.
It just goes to show you how much bullshit there is in economic theory.
You're much better at economics in practice, Father.
Yes. The real economics.
And we move then on to, I guess, the relocation of Mama and Poppy, who up until this moment in time had been living in Tathra, having retired there, I guess, after Fred finished in the railways at Yenda. They moved to Tathra. Firstly, what do you remember about Tathra and the visits to Tathra?
Well, they had a lovely home in Tathra, just one block back from the beach. I remember how cold the water used to be. Even in January with wetsuits on, you'd still freeze to death. But no, they had a lovely home there. But after what were they there? 25 years. They were starting to move on in age, and out of the blue, Mother contacted me and said that she'd like to move up to Austinville to spend their last days with us, Sophia and I. And that came out of the blue. Anyway, Sophia started looking around again for a unit for them, and in this particular day we were looking at a unit just down in Clare Street, just down from where, you know, we live. And a call came through. This duplex just came on the market at 120 Tanamira, which was down on the corner. So Rosalind was 44, we were 60. We had a look at this unit at 120, and it had everything that you wanted. It was relatively modern, two bedroom, a little backyard, and we thought it'd be ideal. And rang Mum and said, "This is the story." Either yes or no. She said, "Well, we'll buy it sight unseen, based on your assessment. Anyway, it took them then 12 months to sell their house in Tathra. So I had to look after it and maintain it for 12 months. And I had some new carpet put down. I had it painted. I done a retaining wall out the back myself and looked after the place. And they moved up and they were in their early 80s at this stage. So they had a good 10 years there before they moved into their 90s, and then their health started deteriorating after that.
So is it your recollection that they didn't move from Tathra until they sold in Tathra?
Yeah, they sold in Tathra. It took them 12 months to sell. And I went down and organised with my brother Les, who lives down at Pambula, only an hour away. We organised the removal, the clean of the place, and then I drove them up and then helped unpack and settle them down here. Sophie done a lot of cleaning and windows, floors and everything had to be done all over again. And set up Mum and Dad, and they were at 120 Tenamira for over 10 years then.
And what kept them busy once they had moved into Tenamira Drive throughout the week? I recall Poppy became involved with the return services.
He didn't take up bowls. You know, they loved their bowls down at Tathra, but when they came up here, they didn't play bowls. Dad joined the ex-servicemen's, the RSL ex-servicemen's league, and used to go to his monthly meetings. They had a lunchtime dinner. He started marching again on Anzac Day. He used to play the organ, which he was self-taught. He was quite good at it too. Of an afternoon, he used to play some old favourites for Mum. And Mum used to do her letter writing to the girls. That used to take her a couple of days off and on. Do the cooking, do the housework. Dad mowed the lawns until he was in his 90s. So done a little bit of gardening. Used to go out to Bangalore to see her Mum's sister, Nellie, and Frank Scarabellotti. And at that time, she had also her sister Mary in Lismore and her brother Tom, Father Tom Maloney, who was at Woodlawn, lived at Woodlawn, but worked as a pastor at the hospitals and retirement villages. So they had she had a little family up here as well.
And then, I guess, Mama's health. She took a turn for the worst in relation to some, was it water on the lungs, liquid on the lungs?
Yeah, clots on the...
A trigger.
Yeah, blood clots. Yes, after 90, it was all downhill for Mum. She developed these blood clots for a couple of years and spent some time in hospital. Anyway, on the second or third occasion, the caseworker was concerned that she needed more care, so arranged to go to an aged care facility as respite care. It's a government-funded program. You're entitled to, I think it was 60 days per year of respite care. So luckily we got her into the Adventist home, 7-day Adventist home, just out on Pierce's Creek Road, only probably 2 kilometres from where we live. And as it turned out, that is where they both finished up. I was very happy with the service, the care, the staff, the meals. It was all that I wanted as far as they were concerned. So following this respite care for a period of 3 weeks, they released her, and I then started doing all the paperwork at a number of homes in Lismore, Balna, Austinville, to secure their future in aged care. And there's certainly a lot of paperwork. There's no doubt about that.
Well, just, yes. You like paperwork, Father.
And associated with that, of course, you've got to have power of attorney over their financial situation, and most importantly, guardianship, which gives you the ability to make decisions on their health in regard to doctors and medication and treatments and so on. So it's important to have the paperwork there. And a little bit later on, I organised a funeral plan for them so that when the time came, I didn't have to do all the paperwork associated with, you know, with their burial. It was already there in the file to be pulled out and to be acted upon at the time.
And eventually they moved permanently into this retirement home, and I guess the home created an innovative solution for them initially in regards to the room setup.
Yes. Couldn't believe we not only got one room, but we got two rooms side by side. And rather than having beds in each room, for the first time they put the two single beds in the one room, and the second room then became the sitting room, the TV room. And so that was a first for them as well. But it did take some convincing. Sophie was so good at this. You know, you'd have them convinced and they'd change their mind. You'd have them convinced, they'd change their mind. And even after we took Mum out to settle her down on the first occasion, the next day I went out, and here they were, Mum and Dad, out on the front lounge with their bags packed, ready to come home. And I said, no, this is not on. I said, no. Couldn't believe it. Anyway, the manager was there. I said, look, leave it to me. I'll sort it out. Dad said, oh, if you don't take me, I'll get a taxi. I said, there's no taxis here, Dad. I said, it's a long walk. Anyway, we went through it all again. And anyway, certainly wasn't easy, I can tell you. It was... But you know, the home, very, very good. You know, they had, you know, while they have regular meal times and times for medication and for showering and dressing, during the day they have activities, a whole range of, you know, they bring in a lot of kids for singing and doing play acting. You know, a lot of people go there to help out with craft, arty craft things. They have sing-alongs, bingo, and then they have things of an afternoon as well if you want to. They have a church service at the weekend. Even though it was Seventh-day Adventist, Mum thought it was Catholic at the end of the at the end of the time. So that was good. She was still going to church. But no, I was very, very happy with the home.
Amen. That saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind,
and now that you've been retired for quite some time, you're into a routine. What keeps you busy? How do you fill your days and what do you enjoy doing?
Well, we mentioned a little bit before about cooking. When I retired, I started watching some shows on TV. There were a lot of cooking shows on TV from various chefs from around the world. Some that we've been to their restaurants, like Heston and who else is there? Gordon Ramsay. Those two in particular in London. Peter Gilmore in Sydney. So I took more and more interest, and I started doing more and more cooking, and enjoyed it more and more. So now I've taken over the cooking. Well, and seeing I'm cooking, I've got to do the shopping as well. So I do the shopping and the cooking, and I really enjoy that. As far as the garden is concerned, I built a shade house to grow some orchids, and part of my redundancy was I put up a plan to do some breeding work on orchids. So I got a computer. It was a $5,000 grant. I've got a computer, I've got plants, and various odds and ends to the tune of $5,000 to set up this this program for doing orchids, which I did for a little while and then fell by the wayside. But I buy small.
So the computer that the taxpayer funded has basically been used for you to research all your holidays.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Oh, well, you fall off the radar after a little while. So I buy small plants, only 20 to 30 mil in size, and then grow them out, keep potting them on. And after 12, 18 months, 2 years, you start getting flowers. And here they flower either in the autumn or in the spring. So I've got probably about 200 plants in the shade house. I propagate them up through vegetative propagation. I don't do any seed work, but I do vegetatively propagate a few plants of the better ones. So it's nice to have flowers. I used to take Mum down some nice orchids brighten her up. The smell of them, Sophia can't stand the smell of them in the house, the perfume, so I show them on a table on the back patio.
Now, this conversation with John has not ended because he still has a few years left in him yet. But sadly, the teapot has run dry. Thank you very much for listening. My conversation with John is steeping, and I hope will continue in a future series, and so do look out for that. As I draw the curtains on series one of my podcast, A Cup of Tea with Stephen D., I wish to thank all three of my guests for being so generous with their time and for trusting me to share their memories and recollections with the world. I mean to say, my guests are now podcast stars, yet they don't really know what a podcast is. In closing, I want to thank my audience of listeners. I hope you've enjoyed listening and possibly learnt something new as we ventured down memory lane. Until we chat again, don't let the tea get cold.
Every time I think about you, you look so good to me. You know you make me wanna shout, throw my head back, shout, kick my hands up, shout, throw my heels back, shout. Come on now, shout, take it easy, shout, take it easy, shout, take it easy, shout, take it easy, shout. A little bit softer now, 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 shout. A little bit louder 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 now, shout.